From the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina, it's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence, at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax. But buckle up and let's wade into the deep end of what's really happening in your old North State.
Welcome to another edition of Civitalk. We're going to be talking a little bit about Brooke and her vacation plans with her family. We're going to talk scooters. You may have noticed them around Raleigh. In a new Civitas article related to identity politics and maybe a few surprises after that. Brooke, how are you doing?
Doing well, Ray. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. I'm excited to hear about your vacation because it'll just make me jealous.
Pending vacation. So I haven't actually gone on it yet, but I can't tell you how excited I am because it's been a childhood dream of mine to go to this place. So any guesses? I know you know, but if you hadn't known in advance, where would you have guessed I was going?
Tahiti.
Oh, Tahiti would be amazing.
That would be pretty awesome.
But no, alas, I am going to, drum roll please, Hershey, Pennsylvania. And I couldn't be more excited.
That was like a balloon deflating. Listeners are like, psh.
If you love chocolate as much as I do, then this is your paradise. This is better than Tahiti, actually.
I don't know about that.
I am going to the Hershey Kiss capital of the world. It is the sweetest place on earth. So
I was in Hershey, Pennsylvania for a swim meet, and I think it was like 5:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning. The park wasn't even open, but I just remember driving by the park and seeing it and kind of being impressed as a kid. But that was so long ago. I want to say that was like 1988 or 89 or something.
Well, apparently there are a lot of attractions there, a good number of roller coasters, and even more exciting is the fact that there's a spa there, and it's called Melt Spa by Hershey. And so I'm like, do I get to get a facial in Hershey Kisses or something? I don't know, but I'm open to trying. So can't wait.
That sounds like a lot of fun, actually. I think I'd be into that. But yeah. I'm not as big on chocolate as some people. I like it, obviously, but I don't like crave it like some people.
Oh, I crave it. I crave it a lot. So, and I'm really a big fan of Hershey Kisses. So I'm trying to find a creative way to tell my kids about it. They're not going to listen to this before it airs and before I tell them. So that's good. I think we're safe. But I'm trying to think of a way to surprise them. Although I don't even know if they know where Hershey is
Hershey, is Hershey is Hershey's the they're not a advertiser on this show, but are they the poor man's chocolate?
They
I remember you mentioning that because I'm more into some of the European, like German, Swiss chocolates.
Mm-hmm. You like the Lindt and the Godiva stuff. Yeah,
it's just a little bit more appealing.
I'm a blue collar chocolate kind of eater. So.
I do like M&M's. Like, are they Hershey's or they're Mars?
They're Mars.
See, I can't even like.
Ray, come on, get it together. Don't talk to me if you don't know your chocolate.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess apparently I don't know.
So here's a fun chocolate story. It's going to gross some people out, but I have been to a number of baby showers in my day. And one of the best baby shower games of all.
I have not been to any baby showers.
Then you have not had the joy of playing one particular baby shower game where you get 5 different types of chocolate candy bars and you melt them and then you put them in a diaper and you pass the diapers around and the attendees have to guess which chocolate bar it is. But it looks really, really gross.
Yeah. Did you see that story about the diapers, Sesame Street? Did you see that on social media?
No.
I don't remember how it got rectified, but I think Sesame Street came out and maybe they're not pulling the diapers. But parents complained that there were too many male figures on the Sesame Street brand of whatever diapers. I don't know. You know, I know Huggies and Pampers probably partner with these groups. But do people have too much time on their hand?
Well, that's
because there's
just
too many I don't even think of these puppets as being like sexual beings, like you know, gender.
Right, right, yeah. So, no, it's the patriarchy. We have to rid the patriarchy of every facet of society. And clearly,
but our little girls
Bert,
really
Big Bird.
Are little girls really concerned about when they're doing their business? Is it, you know, there's too many male figure puppets in their diapers? But I just can't believe that parents complained about it. I'm just going to go off on a rant. We didn't even talk about this before the show, so there was no plan to do this. But it makes me feel better as a person in a way that I don't even worry about this stuff. Like, who has time to worry about what characters are on a diaper?
Those people who constantly look at everything through a victim versus oppressor sort of paradigm.
No doubt.
And sadly, there are more and more people looking at things through that paradigm, at least the younger generation, because they're being taught by these ultra-leftist professors in colleges. And so this is what they are getting, what they're getting radicalized in, so that they even actually care about stuff like this. Now, I don't know how...
And there was a... I'm only paying this because my son watches Elmo, so I'm seeing this stuff now. And then there was the one of the writers from Sesame Street. This has been a brouhaha for a while. It's been in the news cycle before. But it's claiming that Bert and Ernie are, in fact...
Lovers.
Lovers, yeah.
Which is insane, because like you said, they're asexual in a lot of ways, is how we would view them. I mean, for goodness sake, they don't even have pants, I don't think.
Why do you have to make them straight or gay or this or that, you know?
Because when politics is your religion, everything has to be political, and even sexuality. I mean, it's just all political, and it's unfortunate.
I just don't understand, like, as a parent, like, how... It seems like you'd be too busy to, like, write letters or, like... shame people on social media about not being enough female puppets.
Maybe it's not parents that are doing this. Maybe it's like young college students.
I really didn't read the article that closely, to be honest. I just saw the headlines. People were talking about it on social media.
I mean, especially if they're going to focus on that and not talk about how Vogue and Maxim magazines are at eye level for little kids when they're walking through grocery stores and stuff. I mean, so if we're going to be concerned about what our kids are exposed to, why don't we start with the magazine covers?
Okay, but everything I ever learned was from those magazines.
Then clearly you learned wrong and had to have some reformation later on. But anyway. So how did we get from there?
I have no idea. Let's talk about, you're going to do other stuff on this trip, right? Weren't you going to go
visit? Oh my goodness. We're going to go visit the Amish.
That's
exciting.
I'm so excited. I've never, until I think it was after Katrina, I've never really known anybody Amish until there were some Amish people that came down. There were Old Order Mennonites and Amish that came to help up with the cleanup down on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. And they were very helpful, obviously very industrious in terms of helping people rebuild, and were great carpenters and things like that. But I hadn't known any, and I just thought, from our vantage point, that they were a little bizarre to me. But they were obviously very helpful in the Katrina cleanup.
Mm-hmm, yeah, well... no one can doubt, I think, that they are people that have strong convictions, and one of them being helping others, and also a strong conviction of not listening to things like Civitalk, our radio show, because they don't use the electronics. But I am really excited because I've long been interested and fascinated by Amish life. Beverly Lewis, she's a Christian author. I think she really helped popularize the Amish culture. Yeah. And then there's, I think it was a TLC show regarding kids coming out of the Amish lifestyle. So they kind of made it a reality
And
TV
I think Michael
show.
Landon Jr., and I'm pretty sure about this, but I think Michael Landon Jr. Has written some screenplays and done some movies about Amish life too.
Yeah. So anyways, I mean, regardless of whether or not they live insulated lives, it has made it into mainstream America to some
Absolutely,
extent.
Yeah.
So I'm super excited to go to Lancaster and at least just be exposed to legit Amish
culture.
Yeah,
and they make great furniture from what I
understand.
They
make great furniture and they make really good friendship bread. Have you ever heard of Amish friendship
bread? I
have
heard of it. I don't know if I've ever had it.
So it's like this 10-day, it takes 10 days to make the bread. I used to do it when I was younger and had a little bit more time on my hands, but I would give my friends, like 10 different people, a starter kit as well, and so you kept adding to the friendship bread kit and then giving it to your peers and things like that. And the bread was great. It was like a sugary cinnamon sort of combination, so maybe I'll get some.
I'm looking forward to hearing about your trip. I think it'll be fun.
Yeah,
and
I'll
you'll
let
have some good
know.
Anecdotes for the next podcast.
I'm sure I will. So anyways, but let's move from Amish to scooters.
Yep, horse and buggy to scooters, folks.
Yeah, so if you live in the Triangle area or any other sort of metropolitan area,
I don't know if Charlotte has them. Charlotte's not quite as...
Really? You don't think they would have it?
They don't seem to me as a walking city as much as Raleigh might be.
Okay.
So I don't know if they have... They might, though. They might. I just don't remember seeing that.
Maybe
but
someone can
Austin
look that up.
Austin and some of the, Nashville probably has them.
Yeah, so these are called Bird scooters. There's also the Lime scooters, if you've seen any Lime bikes. So they're all around the Triangle, primarily concentrated in downtown, though, I'd say. And so, the government, especially in Durham, because they're trying to expand out to Durham, has concerns about these scooters. They want to regulate them. That's what Mayor Shule said. He wants to make sure that they have some sort of regulations in place.
It looks like Charlotte has the scooters.
Oh, they do. Okay.
That's what the Charlotte Observer article is.
Yeah. So, you know, public figures or elected officials don't know exactly how to deal with these. But so I'll just give an anecdote. So I was downtown a couple of weeks ago and I was just walking around. There were a lot of people on these scooters. They're zipping by. Some are on sidewalks, but you're not really supposed to be.
Most of the ones I've seen have been on sidewalks.
Yeah. You're supposed to have them on a road. Yeah. And if you read the fine print, you're not, you can't be over 200 pounds. You must be sober.
I'm not hitting any of these benchmarks, Brooke.
You have to wear a helmet. But I mean, I've clearly seen people over 200 pounds on them.
I've definitely seen that.
Questionable whether or not they're sober.
Like, they're going like a mile per hour. I'm like walking past them.
But I know my husband and I, when we were downtown, he really wanted to rent one of these scooters and get on it. But I was just not sure because I don't think drivers are comfortable enough around them. I know me as a driver, if there's no bike lane, and you're riding on the scooter at nighttime?
It makes me a little bit nervous because they don't have those. They don't seem like they have much reflective lights or mirrors or anything like that.
Not really. Now, the ones in downtown Raleigh called the Bird, they close down at 9 o'clock. You can't rent a scooter after 9 p.m., which I think is a good safety feature that they have elected to. I mean, that wasn't a Raleigh ordinance. They just elected to do it, to my knowledge. I think that was a good idea given the downtown environment after 9 o'clock. But like I saw one lady just zipping along on her scooter, but she was going against traffic and on the road.
That's not cool.
Was not safe at all. So anyways,
drivers in Raleigh are bad enough in my opinion.
Oh yeah.
But I moved here from Mississippi where people go like 12 miles per hour and they're super polite.
Okay. Well, my husband's a New York City driver. And so I am used to constantly getting flipped birds and things like that, and people cutting off others and stuff like that.
But the scooters remind me of the Andy Griffith episode. I don't know how much Andy Griffith you watch, about the kid on the bike who, Andy Griffith and Barney have to discipline him because he keeps riding on the sidewalk, and there's an ordinance in Mayberry against riding on the sidewalk. And finally, the dad spoils this kid, so the kid says, "I can do what I want," you know, and then he's spoiled. And at the end, I think the dad has to spank the kid. But it just kind of reminds me of that because there seems like some of these scooter people are going rogue.
Could you imagine a show like that with a kid getting spanked flying nowadays?
Oh, yeah. You wouldn't probably be able to air some of those Andy Griffith episodes for sure.
No, they would just like make the kid go to counseling for a little while. Maybe, you know, just try to get the laws changed so that it could accommodate the child rather than the child having to listen. I don't know.
But yeah, there's debate. There's legitimate debates on this issue about regulation. How much should the city government regulate these scooters? Is it worth regulating at all? Is there, you know, what kind of liability is the company going to be once there's a major collision with an automobile?
That's the scary part.
You know, I'm an anti-regulation guy, but there seems like there could be some legitimate regulations here in terms of, especially on the sidewalk. I think that's dangerous. I think it's also just an inconvenience for walkers. Because I'm a person that likes to walk, and I don't want to have to compete with scooters or other sort of motorized vehicles on the sidewalk.
Right, especially if you're, let's say, downtown and you're pushing your son in a stroller or something like that, and then these people are just going by really, really fast. Well, fast comparatively speaking to a walker. But then on the other hand, if they're on the road and they're not wearing a helmet and they're not abiding by regular traffic laws, it's just concerning. So we'll see what happens. We're gonna watch it, but
I gotta say one more thing about the scooters. Yeah. I was also, you know, a lot of libertarians, a lot of free market people are against helmet laws in states, you know, for motorcycles. Mm-hmm. And it's a big thing. I mean, when I lived in Kentucky, I don't think they had a helmet law. I don't know if they do now. Michigan, I'm not sure about. I lived up there for a while. I don't remember. I think they have a helmet law, but I can't remember. They may not. I think Mississippi does. North Carolina does, to my knowledge. But one of the things, I saw a really severe motorcycle collision once in Louisville, Kentucky. And have you ever seen a watermelon dropped off a building?
Oh.
So I don't want to go too much into that to disturb people. But I saw that one time. It just made me rethink some. Maybe those helmet laws are a good idea. So, you know, obviously don't want anybody on the scooters to get hurt, but I could see something bad happening with, you know, not taking precautions and going against traffic and things of that nature.
Yeah. If people aren't going to use them responsibly and it jeopardizes other people's safety, that's where we draw the line, right? Is if your individual liberty impacts my safety, and my children's safety, then we need to have a conversation about how you're behaving.
You sound like Sarah Palin, like we need to have hockey mom, mama bear.
Ray earlier this week told me that I sounded like Sarah Palin. He said I've got that kind of northern
accent. Everybody out
there's
agreeing with me. They're like, oh my gosh, that Ray guy is so smart. He knows. Everybody's out there's agreeing. But a lot of people like Sarah Palin. So
and a lot
thing.
Of people hate her too. Yeah. So I guess it's just a.
I was one of those people that was like super excited when she was initially picked because I liked some of her energy policies and I thought she was just somebody outside of the grain. And now I probably have a little bit more mixed feelings about her.
Yeah.
I think in some ways she was just poisoned so much by the media, you know.
Oh.
You can't be attacked to that degree and not go a little bit off the rails.
Yeah, I mean, they were relentless when they attacked her family and her. It was awful.
A lot of it was disgusting.
So poor woman. Yeah, it was horrible. But anyways, yeah. So Ray thinks I sound like Sarah Palin.
Feedback on that. We want to see positive feedback to Ray's view.
Just email us at radio@nccivitas.org. We'll find out if I actually sound like Sarah
Hockey
Palin.
Mom.
But let's go ahead and talk about a new article out on the Civitas website, which is nccivitas.org. And this one is by our executive vice president, Brian. It's called The Dangerous Assumptions Behind the Left's Identity Politics.
Very good piece.
If you follow politics at all, you know that the left they salivate at the mouth when they're talking about identity politics. If there is any new narrative to peddle when it comes to race relations that juxtapose people against one another or genders against one another, they are all over it.
Definitely all over it.
So Brian Balfour, who wrote this article, he talks about the North Carolina Justice Center, which is a left-leaning group, and they have come out against the income tax cap in our state, and it's actually the Budget and Tax Center, which is outside of the Justice Center. It's an offshoot of it, I think. They issued a tweet a little while ago which said an income tax rate cap in the North Carolina Constitution would benefit white taxpayers more. Read more in our analysis. So you can find their analysis on the Budget and Tax Center website, I guess. But really, their main point is that there is because they assume that systemic racism exists, that white people are at a distinct advantage based on systems already in place that have been built in that cause them to be able to be more advantaged than people of color. And so they're basing their argument off of this assumption. But the author of this article, Brian, argues and says, you know what really is the chief predictor of people not actually benefiting from certain tax policies or actually living in poverty is fatherlessness.
Yeah, I think that's no doubt about that. Family dynamics play so much of a role in poverty. So just to take a materialist view that it's, you know, about having perfect free markets or having even socialism to some extent, or just more of a command economy, obviously that's going to contribute to poverty to a great level. But I don't think there's anything, Brooke, that contributes more to poverty than fatherlessness or just broken families and broken homes.
Yeah, not in our state, at least. I mean, so if you live in North Carolina and you're a fatherless home, you're roughly 5 times more likely to be in poverty than those that have a father in the home. I mean, if we want to set up children for success, we need to have an honest conversation about marriage in our state and family dynamics and dads sticking around.
Yeah. I remember Dan Quayle. Do you remember? Are you old enough to remember Dan Quayle getting browbeat over criticizing?
I remember the name, but.
Yeah. Do you remember who he was?
Yeah, he was vice presidential candidate, right?
He was the vice president for 4 years under George Herbert Walker Bush.
Oh,
but anyways,
goodness.
He got browbeat because he criticized the Murphy Brown television show because she was having a child out of wedlock on the show and so on and so forth. And, you know, he just said that there needs to be fathers in society. And I just remember, oh, boy, the media ripped him apart. And we're still in that environment, right? I
think you can't say that anymore, no. Right? Even Rahm Emanuel in Chicago.
Sure.
He even,
yeah, even people on the left are realizing this, yeah.
Right. He talked about the need for us just to have a conversation about faith and families and things like that. And, oh, my goodness, he was completely lambasted for that. So it is very much a taboo topic among in certain circles, but if we really care about improving the lives of children and improving the poverty rate, we won't focus on silly things like the budget and tax center is trying to, you know, pit white taxpayers against black taxpayers. We'll actually go ahead and address some of the root causes, which extend from in large part from Lyndon Johnson's policies in the Great Society. It disincentivized men to stay in homes with their wives and to take care of the children that they fathered.
I have a hard time, Brooke. This is just a more of a personal anecdote, but it plays into the policy. I have a hard time just imagining abandoning your kids financially, especially if you don't, you know, if there's some sort of circumstances that, you know, you wouldn't do that, but also just emotionally mm-hmm. after you have a child. I don't understand the people that do that.
I don't either. I don't. But there. It's so common.
I could see a relationship not working out. A lot of people see that way. You know, with a spouse, those things happen in life, unfortunately, or you know, or even a significant other or whatever that means. But I just can't imagine abandoning your own child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know I had a grandfather. His dad walked out. I think when he was like 11 or 12, he had to go out and get a job.
Wow.
You know, and so to me, it's just bizarre when that happens.
Well, the damage that does on a child psychologically, yeah. I'm sure is extreme. I know my husband grew up in a home where his parents had divorced early on, but his dad did an exceptional job of staying involved despite he and his my husband's mother parting ways. But that is not the norm. Actually, here's some heartbreaking statistics. 66% of black children live in single parent families. 42% of Hispanic Latino children do, as well as 24% of non-Hispanic white children. That across all racial backgrounds, at least one in every four children or one in every four families is a single parent family.
Devastating.
And so when we look around and we see the breakdown in society, we can't just point to government as the problem, although their policies perpetuate it. But this is at its root a breakdown in family and obviously encouraged by bad policies such as the Great Society that we referenced. But this is also, I would say, an indictment against religion, Christianity being the prevalent religion in society, who views marriage as sacred, yet so many people who identify as Christians maybe have experiences like this, where they grew up in a single family home and they didn't have a father to speak of. And it's just this vicious cycle and unfortunate.
I think, too, is like we shouldn't just talk about poverty as being material, like what you have materially. So if you don't have a parent in the home, you know, sometimes there's unforeseen circumstances as a death or something like that.
Right.
It's no fault to anybody. But if you don't have a parent in the home, a mother or a father is missing, then there's a poverty in that, too, you know, in terms of just your overall outlook in life and just your emotional shape as well.
Yeah. Maybe you do have both parents in the home, and maybe you even have a lot of money. And there's other kinds of poverty. You know, there's a soul sort of poverty, I would say. If we believe that people are, you know, that materialism, this material world is not all that there is. There are a lot of people that we have high suicide rates, high depression rates. And we need to take that into account when we're talking about just policy solutions and realizing that policy isn't going to fix everything. There are some just real needs that civil society can help meet when it comes to helping the whole person, not just the portion of the person that government intersects with.
Here's a good quote from Elias Boudinot, who is a philosopher and then thinker, theologian. Good government generally begins in the family, and if the moral character of a people degenerates, their political character soon follows. So I think we've seen a lot of that in our country as well, just sort of as culture collapses, why would we expect the political culture to be able to lead us out of that or to just sort of have answers to everyday society problems? And I think, you know, that's one of the problems that we don't really know how to fix our politics because we don't know how to fix our culture.
Yeah. And I think part of it is intuitive. We might know how to fix it, but we're not willing to fix it because it, because it requires something of us. It costs something to parent a child and parent that child well. It costs something to get up and go to work every day, even if it's not a job you like a lot. It costs something to stay in a marriage.
Freedom requires responsibility. That's one of the things the founders stressed a lot, is that, you know, freedom just doesn't exist in a vacuum. It requires you to be a responsible person, a morally virtuous person, a morally centered person.
Yeah. Yeah. Liberty outside of virtue just morphs and devolves into license. So, yeah, there's a lot to mine from this article. So go ahead and head to nccivitas.org. It's an excellent piece. Again, it's called The Dangerous Assumptions Behind the Left's Identity Politics. But let's shift gears one more time as we're closing out this program, Ray. And I wanted to talk about something that you and I both really enjoy doing, and that's reading as a pastime. We read different books, but is there any book that comes to mind if our listeners are looking for a new read that you could recommend?
Well, if you're looking for something on theology, this is a book that just completely changed my life. I read it in seminary as a young student there. It was called On the Incarnation by the Word by Athanasius. If you want to just kind of, and you like C.S. Lewis, Brooke. So if you don't even want to.
No. I love
C.S. Lewis. Oh, she loves C.S. Lewis. So anyways, he wrote an introduction to this book. I don't know if you knew that. It's actually fairly long, but he wrote a part in this. I'm trying to remember this just from off the top of my head, but he wrote an important part of this introduction was that, you know, a lot of times we focus on what are the new books and what are the cool books that are out today or what is on the best-selling list. But Lewis made the point that there's so many great books and that you have to go back in history and sort of search and unearth some of those books. And that was one for me that's just had a profound impact on my life. I read it over and over again several times, and just sort of it gives you an understanding of Christianity that is just completely unique and kind of neat. So that's one book I've been
reading. What's that called
again? On the Incarnation of the Word by Athanasius.
Okay.
So what about you? Are you reading anything at the moment?
So I am reading The Foundations of a Free and Virtuous Society. It's by Dylan Parham, I think
Dylan
is his name.
Pahman.
Pahman, yeah. You probably know him.
He's
from Acton University, or Acton Institute, I mean. So I'm really enjoying that. That's been great. I am also reading one called The Crisis of Our Age by Pitirim Sorokin. I've read most of it, but
I have not read that, but I've heard of it.
It was a Soviet Union dissident and left, I think, around 1930 and helped start the Harvard Sociology Department. And he talks about culture being divided into three cycles. So if you look at our arts, our sciences, our judicial philosophies and things like that, you can usually distill it to three different cycles called the sensate, which is like the highly scientific data driven focus. And then there's the ideational, which is based on ideas and also has some of that scientific data infused into it. And then there's the idealistic society, and that our culture, and that one has to do with kind of the metaphysical world, or the world that we can't see in the unseen. So anyways, it's fascinating. I can't unpack it all in this last 2 minutes that we have, but anyways, I recommend it. It's called The Crisis of Our Age by Pitirim Sorokin. That's Sorokin.
Really good. I'm a big lover of Solzhenitsyn, so anything Alexander Solzhenitsyn, obviously Russian dissident, is great to me. The Gulag Archipelago. My dad handed that to me when I was like in eighth grade and told me to read it. And I read most of it then. It was pretty dense and heavy for an eighth grader, but he said I needed to read it. So I sat down and read most of it. It was eye opening. It just gives you a depressing but truthful view of the totalitarian worldview and what it means. Another book I'm reading right now, I've kind of read before, I was skimming around in it. It's a big book, but it's Paul Johnson, who's a British historian, and it's called A History of the American People. Great book. He just got a lot of good insight into to American history as a British person. And so he's still alive. I just remember him. He was in the news because he came out and said positive things about Trump. So a lot of people in the media.
Everyone went crazy and lost their minds.
dumping on him. But he has he's a profound intellectual, and he's got a great view on American history. Some people that like the Churchill volumes on American history will also, I think, appreciate Paul Johnson, who goes later into history just because he's alive now. And his book is great. It's called A History of the American People. And you should get it. If you like American history, it's a great book to read.
It sounds like it. I'm going to have to check that one out, too. So we're out of time. We want to thank you all for listening and joining us this week. And so we want to hear from you. If you want to give us any feedback, radio at NCCivitas is how you can get a hold of us. Until next time, though, we hope you have a great week. Thanks for joining.
Thank you. We appreciate you.